So in our last class, we were ending up looking at this idea in chapter 8. Let me get over there. In section 1, I put the question, and we pretty much were answering it when we ended class, but I put on there, whose plan was this? And what I'm talking about is when, remember this time now at AI, there was a plan that was given in verse 2 of how they were going to take AI. So I posed the question on there as far as whose plan is it? It was the Lord's plan. If we look at Joshua 8:2, it says, "And you shall do Ai and its king just as you did to Jericho and its king. You shall take only the spoil of the cattle and the plunder yourselves, and set an ambush for the city behind it." So we see this idea that they are to ambush the city. And verse 8, they were to seize the city and set it on fire. And this was done. This was done according to what the Lord had commanded. Because in verse 18b, it says, "See, I have commanded you." So all these things were done. And we were just kind of looking at the point when we ended the class, this idea of how much detail did Joshua have in this? You know, what was Joshua's involvement? We know definitely, like we just read, that the Lord spoke to Joshua. And then in verse 4, Joshua speaks to the people. He commands them, saying, and then you see there, he's saying that you're going to ambush the city from behind it. So how much involvement he had as far as giving instruction or what was done, it doesn't really say. We do know that he was instructed and then he instructed the people. And that's pretty much where we had left off when we ended our last class. So before we go any further, were there any comments or anything anyone wanted to add to that? Okay. All righty. And there's just something I just put as a side note, because I even put it in a different color in my notes. Wasn't sure if I was even going to bring it up. But this maneuver or this tactic that they used, from some of the studies and the things I looked at, you know, there's a name for this. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Pincer movement. Okay, so there's an actual name for this tactical or this tactic or maneuver, and there's different places where you can look up how this maneuver is described. But I looked it up in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, and it just defines it as a military attack by two coordinated forces that close in on an enemy position from different directions. And that's kind of what we saw here in AI. They used their past, the last battle. They used what was known about them, if you will. Because in the last battle, remember when AI came out, they ran. And the same thing was used this time. But that was all part of the plan this time. They were to run and to draw them out of the city because there was already people behind it set there to take the city. And then as more were drawn out, then the ones running turn around and then you have everybody. So basically, that's what took place, and that's what's called the pincer movement. Any additional comments on that? No? Okay. So we saw that this was part of God's plan. We saw that this was, it worked out well because of the past. Because, they fell right into it. So they were successful. I put a question on the class that said, what did the Lord say they were allowed to take?
The spoil and
the cattle. The cattle, okay. Yes, ma'am. If y'all look back up at verse 2. When they were given some of this instruction before it was said about the ambush, basically it said, you shall do to Ai what you did to Jericho. And then it says, you shall take only its spoil and its cattle as plunder for yourselves. And as far as I saw, that's all that was said about it. That's nothing else was said. So it was only mentioned once. And I think we kind of know why. It only needed to be said once by this time because of the past things that they've dealt with. But were they faithful in that? Yes. Verse 27 said that they were faithful in this. We'll go to verse 27. It said, Israel took only the cattle and the spoil of that city as plunder for themselves, according to the word of the Lord, which he had commanded Joshua. So it was told what they could take, and they were faithful in only doing that. And then you get down to last couple of verses in this section, and they pretty much just kind of complete this section. We see that in verse 28 it said that Joshua burned Ai and made it a heap forever, a desolation till this day. And it also tells us what he did with the king. It said that he hanged the king of Ai on a tree until evening. And at sunset, Joshua gave command, and they took his body down from the tree and threw it at the entrance of the city gate and raised over it a great heap of stones that stands to this day. And this is something we've seen before that they have done with these kings. They'd hang them up, but then, just up until evening, then at sunset, they bring them down. And this, is something that you can also see, and if you look at Deuteronomy 21. Deuteronomy 21, verses 22 and 23, was some rules, if you will, on this. It says, and if a man was committed, or if a man has committed a sin worthy of death, and he is put to death, and you hang him on a tree, his corpse shall not hang all night on the tree, but you shall surely bury him on the same day. For he who is hanged is accursed of God, so that you do not defile your land which the Lord your God gives you as an inheritance. So we see this idea of why in these cases, when we saw that the king was hanging there, why they were bringing him down in the evening, and then why they were burying them. And again, we just read this in Deuteronomy, so this kind of points back to the standard that they're using. And that's the law of Moses was recognized as the standard. Once we get into the section 2 of chapter 8, that's in chapter 8, in verse 30, when we read verses 30 through 35, it clearly establishes that there was a written law. I put on there for verse 31. What is verse 31 describing? Because, well, let's read what verse 31 says. It says, just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded the sons of Israel, as it is written in the book of the law of Moses, an altar of uncut stones on which no man had wielded an iron tool, and they offered burnt offerings on it to the Lord and sacrificed peace offerings. So where is this written in the book of Moses or in the law of Moses about this uncut stones? I heard some Deuteronomy. Which Deuteronomy 27? Okay, that's right. See, I was right. You can speak up. So Deuteronomy 27, 2 through 8. Let's look over at Deuteronomy 27, 2 and just look at some similarities. Deuteronomy 27, 2. It says, So it shall be on the day when you shall cross the Jordan to the land which the Lord your God gives you, that you shall set up for yourself large stones and coat them with lime and write on them all the words of this law when you cross over in order that you may enter the land which the Lord your God gives you, a land flowing with milk and honey, as the Lord, the God of your fathers, promised you. So it shall be when you cross the Jordan, you shall set up on Mount Ebal these stones, as I am commanding you today, and you shall coat them with lime. Moreover, you shall build there an altar to the Lord your God, an altar of stones. You shall not wield an iron tool on them. You shall build the altar of the Lord your God of uncut stones. And you shall offer on it burnt offerings to the Lord your God. And you shall sacrifice peace offerings and eat there. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God. And you shall write on the stones all the words of this law very distinctly. So, when to do this? We see here it's stating that when they crossed the Jordan, or after the crossing the Jordan was where they were to do this. And it also mentions Mount Ebal. Now, if we go back to Joshua 8, where we were, verse 30, it starts off, then Joshua built an altar to the Lord, the God of Israel, in Mount Ebal. So, one thing, when we see what is said here and what we've looked at in Deuteronomy, we see this authorship of Moses. And, you know, we see that what they were to do is what is playing out here. In 32, this is where it starts going into some of the detail. It says that it's Joshua, wrote there on the stones a copy of the law of Moses, which he had written in the presence of the sons of Israel. There's, when we look at Deuteronomy 27:8. It says to write all these words of this law very distinctly. And we see here in these first five verses that we're looking at, this idea that he was to write on the stones a copy of the law of Moses. When I was studying over some of this, there's different thoughts. It's not real clear what all, at least not to me, it's not real clear what all is being spoken of as far as what was to be written. Now we know because of the space of these rocks or whatever, it's not limited to what he could write. There could be time limitations of what all could be written. So, all the law? What exactly did it have in mind? I'm not sure. But we do know back in verse 34, and when it was alluding to what he wrote, it says, then afterward, this time reference, he read all the words of the law. So, and another thing, the way way this is worded, he was to write these things, and then he was to read all of the law. Now, is it saying he's to read everything he wrote, or was he doing one thing that had one particular part in mind that he was writing, and then when he was reading the complete law? I'm not positive. And if there's any thoughts on that, please, because it's not clear to me what all was entailed or what all the thought was as far as what he was writing down. Because we know how they spoke that the law could mean different things. So what all they had in mind at this point when it was saying what he wrote, and then verses reading all the words of the law, because he would have had that available to him. So that I'm not positive on. Is there any thoughts or anybody want to clear that up for me? Please.
Mm-hmm. God wants them to be prepared. What does he have done? Moses preaches a sermon about the Deuteronomy. And in that sermon emphasizes obedience to God's commandments and statutes. Now they enter the land, and just as soon as they're conquered, Jericho and Ai, what happens? The whole nation, women, little ones, strangers, the whole business, is focused once again, this time on reading the law.
Yes.
So preaching the law, Moses, reading the law, the priest, the leadership of Joshua. And in both cases, this was for the welfare of the nation.
Yeah.
It was not about how strong their army was, how great their economy was, the kind of thing sometimes nations think it's in their strength today, but it was the law of God before they crossed the Jordan and after they crossed the Jordan. But Jesus comes to the earth to set up his kingdom. He preaches, and he said, if you build your house on this rock, it'll stand. Once again, it's what he was preaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so in all of these cases, we have the foundation for the well-being of God's people, hearing and reading and building on the Word of God.
Yes, sir. Good point, Steve. But still don't know what all, when it uses that term, the Book of the Law, if it had one specific thing in mind or any of that. You have any thoughts on that, or?
I don't know. I favor the idea that the whole thing was written. Some say it couldn't. rock.
Yeah, they have plenty of rock.
So that's all suggestion, and so I don't know.
Okay.
But it sounds like there's an emphasis on the whole thing.
Whole thing? Okay. Okay. Yes, sir, Wally. Okay.
You talked about blessing the curses.
Yes.
The curses, this is what they focused on here. You know, whether or not that's what was written, I have no idea.
Okay.
It always reminds me of when I read the way they describe it.
Okay, and we're gonna No, I appreciate your thought. No, it's about right where I'm because one of the things I was gonna bring up, you know, whatever this is, it does entail, because verse 34, it talks about the blessings and the curses, and that's mentioned in Deuteronomy 27 and 28. So you see some of the blessings and curses there. And in 35... in verse 35, I had a point on here, kind of what Steve touched on as well. It says, who was this read to? So it was to be known. And remember what we saw in Joshua 1:7, they've been warned, you know, be careful to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn it to the right or to the left, so that you may have success wherever you go. So, again, in verse 35, there was not a word of all that Moses had commanded. So whatever that is talking about, which Joshua did not read before, all the assembly of Israel, with the women, with the little ones, and the strangers who were living among them. So like Steve said, so that's so everybody would know. Yes, sir.
Craig, if you look at this phrase, the book of the law.
Yes, sir.
If you look at that phrase and see where does it occur in the Pentateuch, it only occurs in the book of Deuteronomy. If you look at the passages there in Deuteronomy, it talks about this book of the law and then referring to the book of Deuteronomy. It's possible that it was written down was the book, the entire book.
Okay.
If you do that, it fits all the things that Joshua said, right? The blessings and curses in there, but all the words that Moses said, you know, the plagues of Moab. So it couldn't possibly be just the book of Deuteronomy.
Okay.
So, quite a bit of writing.
Right. Good thought, Rocky. These are all good comments. I appreciate it. Any other thoughts or comments on this section? No? Okay, thank you. Thank you for your comments. We'll move on to the next section then. In chapter 9, well, I made this next section just a little brief section, 1 and 2. So we see this brief statement in 9, 1 through 2. Then it starts talking about something else. And I put on the lesson a question, have we seen something like this before? And reason why I brought that up, what I had in mind is when we were looking at chapter 5. Chapter 5, 1 was one little section all by itself. And now in the case of 5, 1, 420, what was the end of that? 24, I believe. 424 was the last verse of the previous chapter, and it seemed to me those two were kind of linked. Now, in this situation, it's a different situation. I'm not posing that they are linked, but I think there's some similarity as far as this is a brief section. And in this whole part, when you look at verses 1 through 27, maybe Now, we know that these first two verses are not talking about the other verses, but there's something that is said in the very beginning of this. And if you look at verse 1, it says at the very end of it, heard of it. And then once you get into verse 3, we're not going to talk a lot about it just yet because that's our next little section, but when it was talking about the Gibeonites or the inhabitants of Gibeon, you have this term heard. And then when you get down to verse 24, I think it is. Yes. So when you get down to verse 24, you see this answer that the Gibeonites give as to the reason why they had done this. And 24b, if you will, it says, "It was certainly told your servants that the Lord your God had commanded his servant Moses to give you all the land and to destroy all the inhabitants of the land before you." So they knew, and they had heard, and they knew why these things around them have happened. Just like we had seen about Rahab, things that were going around, people knew what was going on. They had heard about this great God, and they've heard about how he parted the sea and, you know, all of these different things, the battles that they had had up to this time. So this idea of heard. Now, we're going to put 1 and 2 in one section because it's talking about one thing, and then the 3 through the rest is talking about something different, but I think maybe they're pieced together like that because it was both of these were a result of what they heard. Now, they went two different directions with what they heard. Now, verses 1 and 2, it says, "Now it came about when all the kings who were beyond the Jordan, in the hill country and in the lowland, and on all the coast of the great sea towards Lebanon, the Hittite and the Amorite and the Canaanite and the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite heard of it. That they gathered themselves," so they hear what's going on, "then they gathered themselves together with one accord to fight with Joshua and with Israel." So that is their reaction to what they heard. But then when we go into the next section is the reaction that the Gibeonites had to what they heard. So this was addressed in two different ways, but I think it has to do with because of that. Because of what's going on, people are hearing about the Lord and this great nation. Any comments or thoughts? Okay. So, well then let's look at the next section, the verses 3. Question on the lesson says, what impact did Ai have on the Gibeonites? So we've kind of spoke a little about that. I reference verse 3. So they had heard what Joshua had done at Jericho and Ai. And then what we looked at verse 24. So they've been hearing. And we see what their reaction is going to be. We first saw what the reaction of these kings, what their reaction was. And now these inhabitants of Gibeon address it in a different manner. So, in verse 3, well, we've already looked at 3. Let's talk about something else. We'll go a little bit further before I make some other points. It says, how were they able to persuade Joshua to make a covenant with them? So how did they convince him that they were not inhabitants of the land? So first, they claimed that they were from a faraway land, right? Let's look at verses 6 through 9. So this is when they approach the camp. It says, they went to Joshua to the camp at Gilgal and said to him and to the men of Israel, "We have come from a far country. Now, therefore, make a covenant with us." Before we read any more, I mean, that's just, to me, Joshua and them don't know who these people are. They just show up and they say, "Hey, by the way, we're from a far country. Can you make a covenant with us?" That should be an indicator. But nonetheless, verse 7, it says, "And the men of Israel said to the Hivites, perhaps you are living within our land. How then shall we make a covenant with you?" So there is a little bit of hesitation, if you will. But they tell them, "Well, we're your servants." Then Joshua said to them, "Who are you? And where do you come from?" And they said to him, "Your servants have come from a very far country because of the fame of the Lord your God. For we have heard the report of him and all that he did in Egypt." Now that's a true statement. They did hear of him and all that he has done. That's kind of part of our point. But the rest of the things that they're going to tell them, those were not true statements. And if you go back up in verses 4 and 5, we just note some of the things that they did to appear to be true in this. First off, we see they acted craftily. And they set out as envoys. And they took these worn-out sacks on their donkeys and wineskins. And then they roughed them up. They wore them out and they had them tore up and mended. And worn out and patched sandals on their feet and worn out clothes on themselves. And all the bread of their provision was dry and had become crumbled. So they had done some things to play the part, if you will, to kind of sell what they're saying. So evidently they were pretty convincing. Let's look down at verse 14. Now, what did the men of Israel not do that they should have done? Verse 14 states this. Verse 15 is when they're going to go into agreement. What should they have done before they... That's right. They should have asked the counsel of God, and they didn't. They didn't. They didn't seek the wisdom from the Lord. Didn't ask of his counsel. And then in verse 15, it said that Joshua made peace with them. He made a covenant. The people swore an oath to them. Then shortly after, what happens? They found out it's a lie, huh? That's right. They found out that it was a lie. They'd been deceived, verse 16. It says, "And it came about at the end of 3 days, after they had made a covenant with them, that they heard that they were neighbors, and that they were living within their land." So they had deceived them. And that's what they did. In verse 19, it says, all the leaders said to the whole congregation, we have sworn to them by the Lord, the God of Israel, and now we cannot touch them. This we will do to them, even let them live, lest wrath be upon us for the oath which we swore to them. And the leaders said to them, let them live. So they became hewers of wood and drawers of water for the whole congregation, just as the leaders had spoken to them. And also in verses 26 and 27, it said, thus he did to them and delivered them from the hands of the sons of Israel, and they did not kill them. But Joshua made them that day hewers of wood and drawers of water for the congregation and for the altar of the Lord to this day in the place which he would choose. What's one thing we could learn from this situation as far as, okay, like we said, you know, they didn't consult the Lord, and, you know, evidently they didn't go off of much information, but then they entered into a covenant. So that can be a warning to us to beware of rashly making a covenant or going into an agreement. And, you know, we can't seek God's counsel maybe the way they were able, but can't we still seek God's counsel? Can we maybe take the situation that we're looking at specifically, maybe look to God's word and learn some things from it, maybe see some things we should consider before we go into to some of the covenant or think about it, or we can go to God in prayer. You know, these are ways that we can seek God's counsel. So studying in prayer, something for us to consider. Because entering into agreement's not a bad thing. But in this case, you know, it was. They were deceived. So we just need to be careful of that. And what we're going to see in the next chapter is what this had done, or how it had impacted the cities. And we just got a couple more minutes, so we will stop here as far as we won't go into Joshua 10 and 12. We will do that in our next class. We'll start Joshua 10 through 12. So if you don't have that, please get a copy in the back. But we do have a couple minutes, so are there any other comments or thoughts anybody wants to add? Yes, sir.
Conquered two cities totally different ways.
Yes, sir.
They conquered Jericho. It was not by military strategy that we would think of it at all.
Correct.
But they conquered Ai by very cunning military strategy. Why did God use two methods? I don't know. And God may tell us to do things today we don't understand. He may tell us to believe and repent and confess, which we may say I understand.
Yes, sir. Good point. Yes, sir, Craig. Their influence. Yeah.
Now they've had a deception. Now they put themselves at risk. It always makes me wonder about the covenants and the promises.
Yes, sir. I think that's about time. So thank you for your attention, all the good comments. Really appreciate it.